buckle up. It's drive time. The Halloran Hilton Hill Show starts now.
Good afternoon, East Tennessee, and welcome to the Halloran Hilton Hill Show here on News Talk 98.7 WOKI. And I realize I have a little bit more southern twang than Halloran Hill does. I'm Jim Brogan, and I'm privileged to be filling in for Halloran today. And I don't know about you, but I'm ready for 2020. How about you? I know I mean, 2019's been a great year, but I'm ready to move forward. And I know you are too. Be careful as we approach the holiday Wednesday. I know a lot of bad things happen after midnight. So just use good judgment when you're out on the roads as you're getting ready for this new year. I'm excited about 2020. We're going to talk about 2020 today. We're also going to look back a little bit on 2019. It's been a very long year for politicians in Washington, D.C. And, of course, there are the recent impeachment proceedings, but there's also been other legislative events that have occurred that will impact us right here in East Tennessee. And I am privileged to have Knoxville native and former Knox County Mayor Tim Burchett with us this afternoon. He spent the past year in Washington learning the ropes as a freshman congressman and making his mark on the 116th session of Congress. And so today I'm excited to have him with us in studio. Good morning, Congressman Burchett. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, Jim. It's always a pleasure to be here with you, Brett, with a fellow capitalist.
It's very good to be here, brother.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And we've had the privilege of having you on multiple
yes,
times over the years, and you've been a favorite here at the station. Let's look back for a minute. First, you finished you're almost 1 year into your gig in Washington. How do you like the job? Do you miss East Tennessee a little bit?
I miss East Tennessee. I always tell the story, if it's a great day in D.C., and the sun's shining and all, I'm getting bills through committee, and I come home and it's raining and the cable's out and the dogs have pooped on the rug. I sit there and think, man, I'm glad to be home.
I'll bet.
I love my wife and daughter, and I have a wonderful life, and they make it that much more wonderful. And it's nothing like East Tennessee, Jim. I mean, you know that you've traveled I tell you, it makes me homesick about the time I step on the airplane to fly out of here.
Yeah, I would think it would be hard being there as much as you've been there, not just with your family back home, but with your East Tennessee roots. I mean, it's just such a different world there.
Yeah,
right?
It's a totally different world. And, I mean, the people up there, they speak with a funny accent, of course. That's one thing, and as you know, that folks don't. East Tennessee is the only place in the country where people do not speak with an accent, so it's always that. But it's just a different lifestyle, and I get it. I told somebody, if you have a congressman that says that they love being in D.C., you might need to think about getting another congressman, because it's kind of rough and tumble, and it's also like that TV show House of Cards. I've told folks it's just like that, except on the TV show they pass an education bill in 6 weeks, and in D.C. we're not going to pass anything in 6 weeks, and it's total dysfunction. And I think that's the way some people like it, and they like it that way because it keeps leadership in power, and we do nothing or even cause harm. It causes us have to go back to them, and it's just an unfortunate situation. But I've had a good year as far as legislation goes. I passed some legislation. I was able to get some things in, some bills.
And actually, we want to talk about some of that today.
Make a difference. So
now, the political environment there, it seems like it's very fast paced, and you just have to be ready to go 24/7.
Yes, sir. It takes it a little while to get going in the mornings. I'm usually in the office or in a meeting usually before 8 o'clock, and then I go till it quits. This past few weeks with all the hearings on impeachment, they go after hours, of course, and that kind of threw a monkey wrench in everything. We're just kind of waiting around for something to happen, and they ring the bell, and you go, like Pavlov's dog. They ring the bell, and we start salivating. I mean, three or four different times a day, you'll go to the floor and vote on different pieces of legislation. Most of it's just resolutions, urging some foreign group to do something, or some group to, or denouncing some outfit or something. And then And occasionally we do something. You know, we've had big spending bills, which I chose not to vote for because they're outrageous. We're just not fiscally. We can't maintain that lifestyle that this country has grown accustomed to. And so, you know, it's a lot of that, and it's a lot of learning about what's going on and just figuring out the system.
So, and actually, I know you've introduced a bill that deals with our federal debt as it relates to the size of our economy, and we're going to get to that too, because I think that's very, very important, and it's smart to me that you tie that to GDP. So we'll get into all of that, but before we do, though, I can't imagine what the mood is like in the halls of Congress. What's it like around the proverbial water cooler?
I think...
How much of it is just show?
It's all show. Every time you see it on television, everything is we've decided, they've decided over how much time you get. You know, we were making speeches on the impeachment, and they came to us and said, all right, you've got 1 minute. And then about 5 minutes before we were to give our speech, they said, hey, leadership, something's happened. Another member of leadership hasn't gotten to speak. And so we're cutting everybody's time down to 30 seconds. And so, you know, I had to, on the fly, basically, had to reduce what I was going to say. And that kind of thing happens a lot. But, you know, you see the speeches on the floor, and those are all pre-programmed for C-SPAN and everything. And you know, and the Democrats know pretty much what you're going to say, I think. And we know they know what we're going to say. We know what they're going to say. And you're allotted just a certain amount of time, and you know you have that amount of time to get your words in. And it's all just pre-programmed I'd say for television, but it's not television. I'd say originally it had a reason, but now it just seems to be kind of a pattern everybody's in.
Now, this is the second presidential impeachment in yours and my lifetimes.
That's correct.
And third in our nation's history, because, of course, Nixon was never actually impeached. Up resigning.
And, of course, there's question now. Some of the people have said that maybe Trump has not been impeached because they haven't sent it to the Senate, you know, and that's, we can talk about the reasons behind that too.
So how is the experience as a first time congressman? What's that been like, and how do you feel about that you're a part of this historical event?
I walk in every night I walk out and I look at the Capitol and the lights, you know, and the raining or spitting snow or whatever. I get a chill down my spine. I just think, man, you know, what a country. I'm my mom and daddy's youngest son. My parents, you know, dad fought in the war, Second World War, and my mom actually flew an airplane during the war. And I think the incredible sacrifices they made, and here I am, a United States congressman. I mean, it's kind of awe-inspiring. I walk out, and I always pray for our country, but now I really do with a lot more with a lot more intent.
You know, being that you've spent a year there now, and then if you look down the road at those that have been there 10, 15, even 20 years,
yep.
Do you think that it would be a lot of Congress people have been distracted enough, they've been in that world enough, that they don't feel what you just said?
I think so. I think they just like punching a clock, and they
it becomes a new perspective. It just becomes old hat to them.
Old hat, and I don't think they... they maybe don't feel the, you know, I guess I just feel the enormous debt of gratitude to the people that sent me there. I mean, I'm in awe of it because I am a part of history, and I have this little badge, and I can walk anywhere I want to in the United States Capitol, and it's incredible. I mean, it is incredible. I walk on the House floor. It's where history is made. It's where, you know, I was thinking the other day how FDR gave the speech on when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, a date which will live in infamy, you know. And I think, man, and I look at those pictures and I look down on the floor and I can see where I sit. Although, granted, it's probably new upholstery, new everything, but it's still the same room. And I sometimes walk over to the old Capitol where, and there's plaques on the floor where certain congressmen sit. And one of them is where Abraham Lincoln sat. And, you know, if that's just, to me, it's just hard for me to grasp the enormity of where I am, and I, although I never would compare myself to any of those people, to me it's just it's incredible.
You know, I appreciate Tim hearing your perspective on that, because from the outside looking in, I can see where congressmen and women, when they first get there, have that perspective. But when I look at people who've been there for 20 years, It seems like there's not that reverence that you've just talked about. And I really appreciate that perspective. Because, I mean, it would kind of give me chills to be in that.
I think if you don't, you need to go home. When I was in the state legislature, I remember an old-timer told me, he said, when you pull up and see that Capitol, and if it doesn't inspire you, you need to pack it up and go home.
Yeah.
Because you've become part of the problem. And that's sort of what you do, I guess. You get beat down so much sometimes, or maybe you start reading your own press that you put out and start believing it, then you probably need to step back.
We're going to have more with Congressman Tim Burch, and he's going to be with us for the entire hour. However, it is time for Sherry Bigler with traffic. Welcome back to the Triple H Show here on News Talk 98.7 WOKI. We've got Congressman Tim Burchett in studio with us this afternoon. And before we get back to Tim, though, let's go to Vince Ferrara with our Gator Bowl update.
It's cloudy, and it has rained an awful lot in Jacksonville, just cloudy. So no sunshine in the Sunshine State yet for the Vols. Today is day two for Tennessee. In Jacksonville, they got into town yesterday, quickly went to the practice field. I'm headed there right now to watch day two's practice at the University of North Florida. Vols preparing with a 5-game winning streak, preparing for 8-4 Indiana. Watched them practice this morning. They look pretty big, probably bigger than what some people might think. A good team that's happy to be there. They have a couple of Tennessee kids that'll be motivated in the game as well, and they are practicing at Fernandina Beach High School, which is a long block away from the Atlantic Ocean. So real nice view and setup for Indiana. Both teams are staying at real nice resorts as well, and UT also went to the Naval Station, Mayport Naval Station in Jacksonville today. And just this afternoon to tour ships, helicopter, and speak with some sailors there as well. So a lot of those type of events that both teams are involved in. Our coverage here on News Talk 98.7 of the Vols in the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl is presented by Tracy King and Kings of Real Estate. Your home sold guaranteed, or Tracy will buy it. 865-365-2323. Jim, back to you.
Vince Ferrara, thanks for that Gator Bowl update. Tim, how badly are we going to beat Indiana Thursday night?
Like a drum.
I hope so. Surely we can beat a Big Ten basketball school.
As Ron Wright, a great professional wrestler, said, we'll give him a Tennessee dog whooping.
There you go. I hope you're right. I'll be watching, that's for sure. Now, let's talk about you're part of three committees.
That's correct.
You've been the House Foreign Affairs Committee.
Yeah.
The House Budget Committee.
Yes, sir.
And the House Small Business Committee. All very important committees.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to be on three committees. Most people just get two, and leadership had asked me, I asked them if it was if they were punishing me or if it was. And they said no, because I'd had some experience with budgets dealing with as a county mayor. And, of course, I was on the finance committee when I was in Nashville. And then they knew my interest in small business and foreign affairs. That's really a great committee, because we were actually, you know, when you had the secret meetings in the SCIF, they call it, with Chairman Schiff, you know, all that was going on in the impeachment. I was actually in all those meetings. So, you know, all the stuff that was going on, that was very, I guess, historical, if you want to say it. I told somebody they should have let you in for free and made you pay to get out, because, you know, 8 or 9 hours in those meetings, and lawyers just arguing over where a comma should be or something, you know. It's just not real entertaining.
And doesn't sound productive either, a lot of the...
No, it is all political. They would leak stuff, and we were trying to honor that commitment of not leaking things. And I remember one time the chairman was sort of berating us a little bit on, and then Mark Meadows said, Mr. Chairman, a personal privilege, and he showed him a tweet, and they'd blown up a tweet that one of the members that was one of the Democrat members in the committee, actually, and it was a tweet that he'd put out, and it was leaking confidential information from the meeting, and and just called him out. And then And then the chairman quickly changed the subject very quick. They readjusted their leaking after that, but it just went on and on and on, and it was all kind of bogus, really, because you see the people in the secret meetings and all these folks that you see on the news and then that were testifying, and then their demeanor in the skiff in the private meetings, they were cocky and just, you know, and making statements that they were the leading expert on this, and they weren't the leading expert on anything. And then when they got out in public, their demeanor, when they testified publicly, it was just a 180. It was this complete different persona, and they'd obviously been coached. And, that's the unfortunate thing. I think government should be open. I don't think we...
Yeah, you're big on... Knox County, you opened up as many things as you could to the
absolutely,
public.
Absolutely. You cannot... You put stuff behind closed doors, that's where corruption comes in, or the thought of, worse yet, when it's not corrupt and people think you're corrupt. When you're corrupt and they call you out, they should. But in this case, some really horrible stuff was going on, and they should have been putting it out in the public and letting the public see it, and instead they didn't.
Well, let's dive in. Those three committees seem like they're very diverse.
Yeah.
One to the next.
I mean, foreign affairs, we're meeting with a leader from Africa, say. I remember one leader, I researched him, and his biggest controversy, and get this, his biggest controversy he had at that time was he had two wives, and they were both feuding over who would be recognized as the first lady. I can't imagine that household. That would be very tough.
It sounds like you see some pretty crazy things. Now, you introduced legislation, the Reforming America's Fiscal Toolkit Act,
yep,
or RAFT.
RAFT.
And this is bipartisan legislation that changes Congress's budget procedures in order to establish, and it's about our public debt,
yep,
a lower public debt relative to the size of our economy, which is our gross domestic product, or our GDP. Tell us a little bit more about that, the need for it. How does it, yeah, work? Does it have a chance of really getting something done?
Well, it's bipartisan, so and hopefully I try to do that as much as possible, because not just for the reality of getting something done, but just getting broad-based support. I think that's important. You squeak something by and it goes down partisan lines, you know, and you thump on your chest. That's anybody can do that, but the reality is, we used to say in state legislature, if everybody's a little uncomfortable with a piece of legislation, then it's probably a decent piece of legislation. So everybody has to give a little bit. But, you know, a lot of people don't realize that our country has not passed a budget in over 20 years. Can you imagine? I mean, your business or your family or your church or your temple or your charitable organization not having a budget. And we do these continued resolutions, and that's the way they just jack up. There's no responsible spending at all, and it's crazy. And of course, our spending's on the back of the American taxpayer, and it's out of control. And what the would change would be Congress's budget procedures in order to establish a lower public debt relative to America's gross domestic product, or the GDP. And it just seems like common sense, but in D.C., common sense is not really a common thing.
Let's talk about that a little bit, about the relative to GDP, because what a lot of listeners may not realize is, I mean, it's easy to say $21 trillion is such a high number, but you can't really compare that to a number in the 1970s or the 50s or the 80s. What we should be looking at is how much do we owe relative to what our economy generates annually, which is our GDP.
Right.
And right now, our debt is a little over 100% of our GDP.
Yeah.
So what are you proposing? What does this legislation propose? Are there caps on that? It can't go over 100, 105%? How does that work,
Tim? Well, it's a loose enough framework to where we can get it in committee and get the economists and everybody involved. And that's my whole goal, is to bring everybody to the table and get something on paper that is livable. Because like what you said, if I did it in 1970 standards, it wouldn't be. And we might have to get what they call a multiplier in there for, you know, we have a lot of tax laws out there. Say, for instance, just on the local or the state level, our gas tax. And the reason the gas tax, they're hurting right now, because it was at a certain percentage, and we locked it down at that, and it did not grow with the economy. And so now we're having some more trouble. So hopefully that with the bipartisan support and some of the experts getting them to the table, back to the table, because they really haven't been. It's just been closed door, strong arm, cut a deal with both parties, and then and hopefully this would put something in writing.
Well, you're known to be a fiscal conservative, and so the concern down the road is it just completely runs away from us and it gets out of our grasp.
Yes, sir.
And then
yes,
it's too late to do. And what, you know, what a lot of people don't realize, Tim, is we have had higher debt. If you measure it as a percentage of our GDP, we have had higher debt before.
Yep.
And that was right after World War II. It was at 120% of GDP.
Right.
And I have a chart in my office on this, and it literally just spiked up, but then it immediately went down.
Went down.
We got our arms around it. Now then the, you know, there were a lot of things that contributed over the 20-year period following that to getting the debt down. But that seems like it is a lot more rational than just having these dollar figures, because as the economy grows, it would make sense that our debt might grow.
Yep. And also, I had something here. I had something in my notes, and it was, I've lost it. But everybody knows that if we cannot continue at the rate we're going and continue on. You know, after Second World War, of course, we were in an emergency situation. Well, what's the emergency now, other than we're addicted to the tax dollars of our, I guess it's our great-grandchildren. I'm not sure. I've seen those charts, and they're pretty frightening, of the money that we're spending and borrowing right now. And we have no, we have no intent on paying it back. Politicians are just like you'd think. At least Congress people are. We're running on a 2-year cycle. We're just running on re-election. And it just seems, you know, every couple of years we...
Hard to get things something forward-looking.
Yeah.
Because we're worried about the 2-year cycle.
2-year cycle,
right,
of getting re-elected. And economically, I made the comment the other day when we were passing a big spending bill. I was watching C-SPAN. I was like, man, we need to get a surgeon in here. And somebody said, why? I said, because these guys are throwing their shoulders out of whack, patting themselves on the back for all this crazy spending. Because, you know, you got to have something. And here's the other thing, Jim, I would like to see at some point. We're going to have to see rule changes made. Because when we were in Nashville, we passed what we would call a caption bill, or a bill. And it had to have, if it started out with nursing homes, dadgummit, when the final piece of legislation had to deal with nursing homes. In D.C., they just tack all this crazy stuff onto it. And you know, the argument is, we're going to be here all night. Well, you pay us a pretty good salary. We ought to be there all night voting on individual pieces of legislation.
Well, we have a math problem in the United States. And we'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back. Also about veterans and small business. Let's go to Sherry Bigler with traffic. Listening to the Triple H Show this afternoon. I'm Jim Brogan. I'm your host. I'm filling in for Halloran. And as we kind of leave 2019 and we look forward to 2020, we've got Congressman Tim Burchett in studio with us. He's given us an hour of his time. Very generous of him. He's been somebody who's come on this station a lot over the years. We're very thankful for that and him giving his time to represent us. And, Tim, let's get into the bill you co-sponsored, which has been signed into law, my understanding.
Yep.
And it's to support veteran-owned small businesses. It's called the Patriotic Employer Protection Act. Can you talk about what this is designed to do for small businesses and help support veterans and people serving?
Well, I was glad that my first bill that I passed, especially as a freshman, because you don't usually get that opportunity as a freshman, but we worked very hard. I have a great staff in D.C., and it was actually, it was bipartisan as well, and it strengthens two SBA, Small Business Administration, programs designed to financially assist small business owners when an employee takes a leave of absence for military reserve duty. And, I don't think small businesses should have to struggle as a result of an employee answering call of duty, and they shouldn't have to be discouraged from hiring a military reservist. What can happen in a small, say you own a small business, a small company, and you manufacture something, and you've got a couple of reservists that are in key positions, and they get called up. And this allows, it wasn't any new money. I believe we shifted money over from there where we saw where it was just kind of idly sitting there. It had already been appropriated to, and it will allow small businesses to able to get these grants or loans, I guess you should say, so that they can keep their businesses open. Because let's say you're in a small community and reserves are called up, I mean, that can devastate your company.
Oh, yeah.
And so it allows the small businesses some financial relief there. And hopefully it would keep during these great economic times. And I mean, I can imagine it during tough economic times and making it even worse. So, you know, it was just something we saw there was a problem. We'd received some correspondence from some constituents, and we got Democrat co-sponsorship on the bill, and we're able to work it. It's like voodoo almost up there, Jim. I can't really explain it to you. All of a sudden, you've got a piece of legislation, and it's not going anywhere. And then leadership decides at some point, hey, this looks like something we need to do. And then you get a call, and the next day it's you're talking about it on the floor of the House of Representatives. I mean, it's kind of it sort of a shock to me, really. Like I said, being a freshman, I have a lot of really good pieces of legislation, and this was one of them. And that just but as a freshman, they tell you don't get your hopes up on anything happening. And this the president signed it into law last week, so it's been through the Senate and the House, and so it's law. So I'm on the law books.
That's great. Yeah, that's a great accomplishment. And of course, helping support veterans and businesses that will help veterans, I think, is crucial. We need to do a better job as a country taking care of our veterans.
Yeah, just go look under our bridges.
I know you're passionate about that.
Look under our bridges. Half the people under there are veterans, and that's a disgrace.
Now, Tim, as we look forward to 2020, let's talk about the economy.
Yep.
The economy's just smoking along. There have been some concerns that's showing signs of slowdown, and then the last quarter looks like things are going to look pretty strong. Of course, a lot of people out there, oh my goodness, things are going to slow down. We're going to go into recession soon. We had the whole interest rate thing happen this past summer where we had, you know, long-term bonds were paying less interest than short-term bonds. What are you hearing in Washington about economics in 2020 as we look forward to the new year?
Well, it's strange. The people that are trying to take power or hoping for the bubble to burst, which to me is, I would never want that. I would never want that. I would want to succeed on my own merit, you know. And
so do you think they want a recession?
I do. I hear them, I'm in the gym with them every morning at about 6:30, and I hear them talking, you know, and it's really kind of sad. And I guess we do the same if we're in power. I don't know. It just seems, I mean, if we were trying to get into the White House, but I know there's going to be a correction at some point, but you know, it's the economy's really going well, and I think now is the time. And when I was the mayor of the county, we had good economic times, and I said this is the time we need to be focusing on getting our financial ship in order, because when it's tough times, that's when you can't do away with certain programs and things. But during good times, you can, and you need to start focusing on that. And I would hope that we could do that at some point. But I don't see a lot of it. I see, you know, these green initiatives and things that really there's no parameters on it. There's no specifics of it, and it sounds good. These editorial boards jump all over it, and young folks should be are interested in that, and they should be. But at some point, we need to interject capitalism in the program, and you don't see a lot of that. And unfortunately, too, there's a growing segment in Washington that just think everything should be free. At some point, you're going to run out of billionaires to tax. And the math doesn't work to tax billionaires at whatever percent they're talking about. There's just not enough of them. There's just not enough money. And I think we ought to try to promote the middle class more than tear down the higher tier money makers. And so I guess it's just it's a political mentality of you got it, I want it, and there's a jealousy thing there. And you know, it's funny, I have a lot of friends. I've never been fortunate enough to I earn a great income, but I've never been fortunate enough to be in that higher stratosphere. But I never feel jealous of my friends that do that. Because, you know, they've taken the risk. They've rolled the dice. Folks in our community that are legitimately billionaires, you know, they've fallen on their face many times. And they've struggled and they've made the sacrifices. And dadgummit, they ought to enjoy the fruits of their labor. And I just don't see, I just don't like that mentality where you want to take it just because they got it.
You know, I can't imagine wanting a recession.
Yeah, it's crazy.
The trade thing, you know, trade is a, I mean, the trade war definitely has had an impact on our economy in this, in slowing things down, at least for the first half of this year.
Absolutely.
Into the third quarter. So do you think new trade deals?
I think if we can get the deal with China locked down, and everybody worries about North Korea. Folks, North Korea can't even get a missile off the pad. I mean, they had a couple years back, everybody was worried about it, and they've got a, and yeah, we need to watch them, because if they drop a nuclear missile on a landing pad and it blows back over China, that could create a lot of problems. And we should be careful there. But, what we got to worry about is China. They have, they'll go into these countries, especially Africa, and they'll say, hey, we're going to build you all. We want to contract with y'all to build a dam or whatever, a power supply. And the folks say, great, that's great. But they're not educated enough. And the Chinese take advantage of them. They get about 45% of the way through and they pull out and they say, you know, you can't pay it on the rest of it. And then they come back in and then the Chinese own it and they build it and they own it. And that's how they take over. And their tentacles are all over Africa. And we are foolish if we trust them. And Trump is working on a deal right now with him, and I hope he gets it, and I hope we can verify
it. Do you think it could really help kind of continue to push the economy along the way it's been growing?
Yes, sir, because their emerging markets are incredible, but a lot of their technology is stuff they've stolen from us. Let's just be honest. They go in and steal our ideas, and then they make them better. They're putting on new coal-fired plants. You know, everybody was worried about the environment, which they should be. And we try to get us in all these environmental deals. We can't use coal. Well, dadgummit, they're putting a new coal-fired plant on about every 30 days or something. It's incredible. And they are not environment. If you know anybody who's visited China, ask them about in the big cities, ask them about the, I mean, you can't open the windows at night because you'll suffocate, literally. So, it's a horrible situation, and they don't care about their people, and their economic might is huge, and we shouldn't trust them as far as we could throw Neyland Staley.
We're visiting this afternoon with Congressman Tim Burchett here on the Triple Eight Show. It's time for Sherry Bigler with traffic. You're listening to the Triple Eight Show this afternoon on News Talk 98.7 WOKI. And I'm your host, Jim Brogan. I'm filling in for Halloran today, and we're visiting with Congressman Tim Burchett. And we're talking about 2019 and how crazy his first year was in Congress, and we're looking ahead to 2020. I got to ask you, Tim, for months, Nancy Pelosi said, I'm not going to pursue impeachment.
Yep.
And then she just turned on a dime. What happened?
Well, do you remember that's where it's always good to be the sober one in the room. Do you remember that time there was a picture of her standing over the table pointing at him? Not when
there was a blow up there in the White House.
Yeah, that's the one. Well, they went in there, and the president knows which buttons to push with her, and she knows which ones. And apparently, this happens every time. They'd go in there, and he would say something, and she flew off the handle, Jim. And apparently, she walked out. Had the big press conference. Everybody saw it. And then she leaves, and all the other Democrats come back in, and they had a productive meeting and worked everything out. And she had agreed not to do it. And then, you know, with the gang of four.
Not to do the impeachment.
Yeah, she had already told some of her people that even. And they weren't even going ahead with it. And then she got all caught up in it. And then she got mad. And then, boom, there she goes. And she... And now she's looking at her numbers, and it's hurting her. It's hurting because she has 31 Democrats that are in districts that Trump carries. Some of those he carried 10 or 15 points. So, and they're up for reelection, and they'll have other Democrats.
And a lot of commentators have said it's a mistake.
It is. Even the liberals have said. Because if you look at some of those guys, those hardcore Democrats, they did not get on the floor and talk about it. They didn't. They didn't make a statement because they know their numbers, and they know where they're at, and they know that it doesn't help them. Yeah, they're going to vote to impeach him, but they would never get out front on it, and that's what's happened. And they've and she locked them down. And so, and two, you know, the other side is they're afraid if Pelosi, if Ms. Pelosi were, say they kept the majority next time and then she was dethroned, the person that would follow her is much more liberal. And the moderate, even some of the liberal Democrats, know they can't maintain that nationwide with that hardcore liberal agenda. They've got to have, they got to pay for some of this stuff eventually. And so it's an interesting game.
You know, their hate, the Democrats' hatred for, it appears to be just intense dislike for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
How much of it, Tim, is with the judicial process and judicial appointment? Not many people have talked about that.
No, and I think that's what the base of it is. I think you'd be correct in that assumption. The courts, they're just loading up the courts with conservative folks, which is what, you know, it has, a, you know, elections have consequences. And the Senate is just running, they did over 20 just in a short amount of period of time. And these are federal appointments, Jim, that they're lifetime appointments. So it's incredible. If he gets one more Supreme Court, you know, Katie bar the door, they'll, there's a lady who's very conservative who I think would be his appointment. It was probably his last time that they decided to go with Kavanaugh. And so,
I've said with some friends and colleagues that as bad as it was with Kavanaugh, as ugly as it was, I don't think we've ever seen anything if something like where if Ginsburg were to pass away.
They're already interviewing people this lady would probably was in kindergarten with. You know, they'll drag up old boyfriends, old girlfriends, people she was in school with, and what she said and what she meant and all this stuff. It's going to be brutal. They will lay down in the road because Roe v. Wade is what they're talking about. But the reality is these other federal courts, they have a dealing with business and crime and everything just down the line. And it really sets our national agenda. And that's what they're after. They know if Trump gets into, I think in year five, he will clean house on the swamp. He gets it now. He lets some hens lets some foxes in the hen house, and he knows it now. And he will clean house, and that will set the swamp back decades if he was in a fifth year, because he will go through that State Department. Some of the things that I've seen that have gone on in the State Department would, they write movie, they make movies and write books about it. It's unbelievable what I've seen, and it's just. You know, just being a casual, just casually catching it as I hear somebody talking or in a meeting somewhere.
It's U.S. Congressman Tim Burchett, as we've been talking about his first year in the U.S. Congress in 2019 and what we're looking at in 2020. Congressman, we're about out of time. Just 30 seconds, maybe. Do you think we'll ever see bipartisanship again? It just seems like it's, to me, to the point of no return.
If the American public demands it, we will, but the problem is they won't. And when we have 20% of the population that's eligible to vote votes, then
well, but the different electorate, like Tennessee, is strongly Republican.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the urban versus the rural areas, it's so strongly one way or the other. It's like the nation's just so divided. It seems like we almost have a social civil war.
We do. I've heard people say it's never been any, they've never seen it any worse, but. And you pick up a history book, it's been worse, and it'll get a lot worse actually because everybody is so polarized right now. There's very few. I'm as conservative as I've ever been, but I still reach across the aisle. And I want to thank you, Jim, for the great work you do. There's nothing better in this world. There's a lot of things better, but there's one thing that's good is financial security, and that's what you do for a living, and that's a awesome responsibility, and I appreciate you for what you do.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Congressman Tim Burchett, for being with us as we'll get to our break.